in Parashat HaShavua. But not only is it Parashat HaShavua, it's also the entire period in which we find ourselves, the period of the Sphira. What I want to focus on is the personality of one man, and that's Rabbi Akiva Ben Yosef. But as I prepared for the Shia, I discovered that to attempt to penetrate, even in a small way, the greatness of Rabbi Akiva can't be done in an hour, it can't be done in many hours. The Gemara says that when God showed Moshe Rabbeinu all of the generations to come, and finally he showed him a fellow by the name of Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, so Moshe Rabbeinu turned to the convention and said, "You're going to have somebody like Akiva ben Yosef, and you're giving Torah through me." He is the one who should have given Torah. Rabbi Akiva is a giant, a colossus. Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, by the way, his father was a bear. The Bible says he was made one of Shel Sisera, the grandchildren of Sisera, you understand, from Pontus and Mitten of the worst order. Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, story is so amazing, so amazing. What I'm going to focus on is a number of the Ma'amarei Chazal, the statements of Chazal that deal with Rabbi Akiva, and maybe we will be able to deal with one aspect of his personality. The fact is, what got me onto this is that we had, last week or 2 weeks ago, we have learned one of the famous Gemaras of Rabbi Akiva, that you have on the second side of the sheet, which really repeat from the last week or 2 weeks ago. But we're going to start on side one, and maybe we'll deal with the where I have found that the Akiva rooted in Parshat HaShavua. The fact is, of course, that it's not too difficult to do that, because there's only a parsha in Torah that Rabbi Akiva didn't have something significant to say about it, but one of the most significant ones happens to me in this week's parsha. And it's a little piece down at the bottom, number six, Parshat Bahar. In the parsha it says that you should not take interest from a fellow Jew. You shouldn't take interest. You give him money, you give him a gemach, as you will express it, you don't charge him interest. And the pasuk says, v'chei achicha imach. Your brother should be able to live with you. Because the event that you're going to charge people interest, the interest begins to grow and grow. It's something that eats away at the foundations of a society. On the third line over there, it says, "Lekidatanya shnayim shayu hayim mahalchim baderech." This is the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Number six, the third line, shnayim. Two people were going on the road, and one of them has a canteen, a maniac of water. In shotin, if they're both going to drink from the canteen, both are going to die. In the normal order of things, there simply is no way that they will make it to safety or to water. Being shoteh al mehen, but what happens if one of them is going to drink? And of course, we're talking about the person to whom the canteen of water belongs. It's his canteen of water. If he drinks, then he's going to make it to the next station where there's going to be water. If he is going to share his water with his fellow, they're both going to die. A dilemma. A moral and ethical dilemma. What are you supposed to do? When I even saw the Shaila asked, with regard to, pilots that have had to eject from their plane and they're in enemy territory someplace in the desert, and only one of them has his
power.
One of them has, one of, they both have parachutes.
Otherwise it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. If you can't have a parachute, it's not going to need water. So here it is, they, or another case of a tank that was hit and surrounded by the enemy. Two of the soldiers made their way off in, I don't know, through a forest, underbrush, and one maybe after the two of them. And says, will they make it to water? Won't they make it to water? So what do you do? This is the moral dilemma that the Gemara raises. So the Gemara says, being shoteh chodnehen, if one of them drinks, my kia liyishuv, he will be able to arrive at a place where there is a settlement of people that will be water there. Darash ben petura. Ben petura darshin. Ben petura learned, mutov shiyishuv shneim viyamutu, better that both of them drink and die, v'am yire echad b'mitato shel chavero, and let not one see the other one die. That was how Ben Keturah passed. That's all. He shares his water with his fellow, and they both die. Avshabur Rabbi Akiva will remain until Rabbi Akiva came and he thought, on the basis of this pasuk in our Sedra, v'chei ochicha imach, your brother shall live with you. So what's understood in v'chei ochicha imach? That one of you is significant, more significant than the other. Your brother should live with you. You come first. Make it possible for your brother also to be able to live with you. So he learned v'chei ochicha imach, the famous statement of Rabbi Akiva, Chayecho Kodmin L'Chayei Chavercha, your life comes before your friend's life. This is the operative halakhic statement of Rabbi Akiva. There are all sorts of explanations wherein lies the machlokes between the two. I believe it's Chazon Ish or the Tzid who says that the temporary life of my fellow Jew. In other words, if they're both going to drink, then they're both going to live a little bit longer. So what's really up for discussion here? If I drink it all, I have whatever one's normal lifespan is. If I share, then I'm going to be giving a shaw, temporary light to my friend. Because Alushu says that when one's temporary life is in danger, Ben Tura holds. And he's the one who needs right now that anything that's available for him to use to keep him alive comes first right now. The other fellow is not yet in danger. The one who has the water is not yet in danger. But this fellow is now immediately in danger. And we have to give him the water. But anyway, the end is what Rabbi Akiva fasting. Chayecho kolmen l'chaye chavercha. Your life comes before your friend. All right. Remember also, one has to see this in context with one of the great other famous statements of Rabbi Akiva. V'yahavta l've'achor kamocha, love your friend like yourself, zeh klal gadol b'Torah. Rabbi Akiva is the one who said that this is a great rule in Torah. V'yahavta l've'achor kamocha. Which of course makes Rabbi Akiva's position here more clearly understood. In other words, Rabbi Akiva has to say this because the Ahavta L'Re'acha Kamocha might have left the impression that I'm supposed to love him precisely the way I love myself, which means I should share my water, or maybe not even share my water, give all of my water there. That, of course, would create an even worse ethical dilemma, because I can imagine to myself, if because I love my fellow I should give him all the water. So what happens the moment I give him all the water? He has to give all the water to me. You know what's going to happen? I can keep giving him all the water, and it's all going to spill. So if God can, Pastor Ralph will come over and take my water. Ah, no, no, no. Pastor Ralph, come on, take my water. So what was terribly important was that Rashi, the statement that Chayefa called me Chayefa Befa. There has to be a way out of the dilemma. And the way out of the dilemma is that if you're all said and done, the Chay of Chichotima, your brother lives with you, I come first. I come first. When it comes to the ultimate, the Chay of Chichotima, I come first. All right, so there already now we've already dealt with the two statements of Rashi. I'm going to take another few, and I'm going to attempt to develop some approach to just a little bit of the greatness of Rabbi Akiva. Number one is the Gemara Mivamis. To take a look on the Gemara Mivamis says the following: a person who had children in his youth should have children as long as one can later in life, because you never know who's going to be the biggest nachas. The Gemara goes on to say that if a person had students in his youth, should have students in his old age, because you never know who's going to be the best one. Amru, if you'll take a look on the left-hand side, it's there with the English translation from the Oxford Gemara. Amru, they said, Shneim also Elad Zugim Talmidim Hoyulola Rebbe Akiva. Rebbe Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students. And where were they? Migevet. They were spread out Migevet ad Antiparas. From Gevet until Antiparas. We're not terribly sure where they were, where that was, but it seems that they were along the northern border of Eretz Yisrael. Gevesham Tipras. The Kulam Mesu with Perek Echad, and all of them died during one period of time. Mipnei Shalom Nahagu Kavod Zelo said, because they did not treat each other with respect. V'hoyah Olam Shamein, and the world was desolate, barren of Torah. Archibor of Akiva, it's what Abu Tain Shabbatorum, who Shinolahan, until Rabbi Akiva came to our rabbis in the south, well, we assume that Gedet and Tibris of the north, he came to the rabbis in the south and he taught them Torah. And who are these rabbis? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Loza ben Shamua. We are talking about the pillars of Torah after Rabbi Akiva. He taught those students. The Gemara goes on in the next column to say, Behein Hein and Midu Torah, also show they are the ones who established Torah at that time. Tana, the Gemara says, Kulam Meitu, Mi Pesach Yad Atzeret, all of them died between Pesach and Shavuos. Rav Chama Bar Abba, and some say it was Rav Chiya Bar Abba, said, Kulam Meitu, Mi so that they all died in ugly death. And what was that? That death was Ashkelon. Askarah, the first we say, is diphtheria. What was that? An inflammation of the throat that begins in the digestive tract. It is the worst of hundreds of forms of death, the Gemara says. Askarah is particularly dehumanizing because it blocks the victim's power of speech. I don't know why the last week this Gemara has bothered me. What has bothered me, I'm going to present a theory. They died because they did not conduct themselves with respect to one another. The great Rabbi Akiva, the colossus of Torah Sheba'al Peh, 24,000 Talmidim, and none of them are good. The old time, how about that? They shall not go cover and set the same, because they didn't treat each other with respect. And they all died between Pesach and Shavuos. I said, wait a minute. Our minhag, our custom of havelus, of a semi-form of mourning between Pesach and Shavuos, is because of these 24,000 and Russia confused. I don't know what's going on here. Are they good or are they bad? It becomes now, for 1800 years at least since it happened, this becomes a period of mourning because of that. And what were they anyway? 24,000 fellas who couldn't conduct themselves with respect for one another. How dare a Rebbe could be like Kiefer B? Didn't have one? 5,000 students that were good. 4,000. 24,000. And failed them all. You know, like this is one of the Gemaras I was probably learned about, heard it for the first time when I was 7 or 8 years old. And I never bothered to think about it after that. Maybe I shouldn't admit it. And it's made me crazy. Here is the inner the fact that it's the inner contradiction. They seem to be bad, and we mourn for them. All the climates will mourn for them. And by the way, here there's no difference between Ashkenazim or Sfaradim or anybody else. Everybody has some period during this time from Pesach to Shavuos that there are no weddings, no live music, no haircuts, you know. This is something that is pervasive by all the clients. And those 24,000 students, God brings down a plague on them. So, of course, the first thing that must be said is the Me'iri, who's one of the Rishonim. And I believe that it's most probably true across the board of many of the Rishonim and others. Rabbi Akiva was the one who became not only the Gadol B'Yisrael, the great teacher, he also was the great commander-in-chief. Klal Yisrael was going through one of the worst periods of its history. Rome. This is after the Churban of the destruction of the second Bet HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva was alive at the time of the Bet HaMikdash. He lived 120 years. He was a young man at the time. It's going to be about 65 years after the Churban that the one who's going to raise the banner of rebellion against Rome and the stand to rebel against Rome, that takes courage, guts, determination, power. Anybody who reads through Shasa, there's so much about Rabbi Akiva. Of all of the Chachmei Yisrael, he did more traveling than anybody else. There are 11 different places in the world that Rabbi Akiva reached during his travels. By the way, every time he came back from his travels, he had learned something else, and he shares his knowledge with us. So of course, unfortunately, say, he was traveling the world, number one, to raise money for the rebellion against Rome. Number two, to encourage Jews to come back to Eretz Yisrael and join in the battle against Rome. For a little country like Judea, Eretz Yisrael, to rebel against the mighty and powerful Holy Roman Empire was to a normal person, it was absolutely sheer madness. I think we've quoted in the past, one of the great Roman historians says, when Judea rebels, the entire Roman Empire quakes. There were big countries that were under the heel of Rome, but they had more trouble from the smallest of their provinces, Judea, than they had from any other place. Of course, Rabbi Akiva, who engineered Mamash Tenshin did, he led the Bar Kokhba rebellion against Rome, was the greatest rebellion of any people against Rome. And it had, of course, a bit more than limited success. They drove the Romans from Yerushalayim. They recaptured Yerushalayim. There are the Bar Kokhba, there are the Bar Kokhba coins that celebrate the liberation of Yerushalayim. For 3 years there was independence until Rome came back with a vengeance, and they had to crush the rebellion. And we know that the final battle was the Battle of Beitar, which they say that some 580,000 soldiers of Bar Kokhba and Bar Kokhba himself were killed in battle. Of course, Rabbi Akiva and the rest of the heads of the rebellion became Gassora, Ruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs that were put to death by Rome. So the Meiri Rishon says that the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva were killed in battle against Rome. The Gemara, obviously, and in many places we find that the Gemara couches historic information in some kind of code. Obviously, they use a code over here when they tell us that they all died, you know, in one period of time, and that happens to be the period of time at which there was a major struggle against Rome. And yes, they fell in battle. By the way, many of the Mepharshim say in that statement, in that little story that's brought in the Haggadah. Well, we talk about the stories of Yeleza and Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, that they were all meeting with Rabbi Akiva in Bnei Brak, and they were talking about Yetziat Mitzrayim all night until their students came in the morning and told them Avotenu, we get a time for saying Kriya Shema in the morning. We've been learning about Kriya Shema, haven't you? All right. And so of course the question is, what kind of chutzpah is this of the students coming to remind their rabbi to say Kriya Shema? Of course, in Bnei Brak anything goes. But obviously we have to understand, what did the Gemara indeed mean by this? So of course, Mepharshim say, by the way, it answers many other questions. Each one of the rabbis who was present was not from Bnei Brak. Bnei Brak was Rabbi Akiva's place. And Rabbi Loza came from Lud, Rabbi Tarfon came from the north. Rabbi Tarfon was a Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer says, that a person shouldn't leave his home for Yontif. And here we find him in Bnei Brak by Rabbi Akiva. What are they all doing there? So what they were all doing there, of course, was they were planning, together with Rabbi Akiva, they were planning the rebellion against Rome. And there's a code involved in the Gemara. When the students come in the morning and tell their rebellion, Rabbi Penu, the time for Kriya Shema in the morning is arrived, they're really sending a coded message. Because the whole rebellion depended not on whether Rabbi Akiva is ready to go out to battle, it depends on whether his students and clients are ready to go out to battle. When they come in the morning and they say, Rabbi Penu, Kriya Shema of the morning has arrived, that means we are ready to remove all foreign yoke and accept upon ourselves only old Malchut Shemani, the heavenly yoke. That was the code of Rabotenu Bikirzman Kriya Shema Shel Shachas. It doesn't mean that they came in to remind a Rebbe of Yakiva, you know, it's nearly time for Kriya Shema Shel Shachas. Chazal very often spoke in code, and you have to understand what you're talking about. So here, as you know, I've looked so often in so many different places to find what does it mean that they died because they did not conduct themselves with respect to one another. So I'm going to try something out. If you disagree with me, but not too violently, I don't have the courage to fight with you. I don't know. I tried it on my friend Nachman Kahana this morning upstairs, and he's beginning to look with it. Look upon it with favor, but there are certain things we have to answer. We don't have to have the answers all the time. I just want to present the theory. I want to say, and this is against everybody, because it's so in Sifri Musa and others, they point out that they were all great tzaddikim, on some little level, some very, very little level, that they're not act completely with respect to one another. Yes? I want to say the following. Their great Rebbe had said that at the time of danger, Chayecha, your life comes first, before Chayecha Vercha, before the life of your Chaver. The Talmidim of Rebbe Akiva, and by the way, another problem with the Gemara, why doesn't it simply say he had 24,000 students? No, he had 12,000 that you have to work your mathematics with. Simple arithmetic, you have to figure out that 12 times 2 equals 24,000. Why couldn't... I want to theorize. Just don't laugh at me. It will hurt me to the quick. If two people are going on the road and there isn't enough water for both of them, Rabbi Akiva says, I come first. If I'm going to conduct myself with a sense of self-worth toward my other fellow, if I'm going to be really covered, you know what that means? I'm going to take all the water. The Talmid Rabbi Akiva, when they went out to battle against Rome, Lo Nahar, who they didn't conduct themselves with the superiority of covered sense there, they shared their water. They shared the dangers. They never left a friend on the field, but under fire they went to bring him out. They conducted themselves with absolute Messiah status. You hear what I'm saying? Nobody left. I may get a little bit. Let's go a little further. What I'm saying is that when the rabbi says, Shalom Nahum, who covered Sebezer, our rabbis are saying about them that they were men of sterling quality. At a time of war, I'm going to be knowing covered. That's not when a Jew goes out to battle. A Jew goes out to battle, I don't count. It's Kleinsel. It's not Chayei Kodmin, my life comes first. We're talking about Chayei Klal Yisrael. And Chayei Klal Yisrael, life of Klal Yisrael comes before everybody, not me. I just want to turn the whole sentence of Lonagu Kavod Zeva Zeh into something completely different than we ever would imagine. By the looks on your face, I think it may not be bad. Now, I want to tell you, I walked for days thinking about this, walked to the extent of when I went to see my doctor Sunday morning, he said, Rabbi Gold, you look so trim. Good. So then, of course, we have to understand, I haven't yet answered all of the code words. Why did they tell us that it was inferior? I don't have an answer for that yet. I'm sure that I'll come up with something. Another few good long walks. There must be a code involved over here. Oh, 24,000 died from diphtheria. There may be some kind of code. Clear historically, no question about it, that these 24,000 died in a heroic battle against Rome. One that shook the Roman Empire. And that's the only good reason why we mourn their deaths 1,800 years later, 1,900 years later. What do you think? We play games? And we take upon ourselves periods of mourning because of 24,000 fellas who couldn't act with decency toward one another. Can't be shot. There is, I found, a Medrash that uses a slightly different term. The Medrash says Shahoiso Einehem Sora. They were stingy with regard to their friends. I can learn the same shot there. As far as the needs of their friends are concerned, everything for the friend. Nobody's going to take anything from the friend. It's not that I'm stingy for myself. And I don't want anybody to take anything from my friend. I think the reason, therefore, that the Gemara talks about pairs is in order to bring to mind Shnayim Shahoyu Ma'alchin Padera, two people that were going on the road. That's the one, if I'm not mistaken, it's the one statement of Rabbi Akiva that's talking about a pair, about two people. And though Rabbi Akiva said, Chayecho Kodmin, your life comes first, here they did not conduct themselves that way. And incidentally, Lahalacha, they were right. Because there's a difference between an individual, the story of the two on the road, stories of individuals. But what happens if it affects all of Klal Yisrael? For example, did Israel have a right or a responsibility to send planes to Entebbe to bring back hostages? People may die. Why does a Jew have a responsibility to risk his life to save somebody else's life? Tzark Halach is very clear, but it's a matter of Klal Yisrael. There are completely different rules. You know why there are different rules? Because there's a halacha, there's a law of war. War means that you go out with the risk of dying in battle for others. In war, you can't say, Chayecho Kodmin, your life comes before anybody else's. By virtue of the fact that you have gone out to war, you are already saying that my life is on the line for everybody else. So I'm saying not only did they not reject their Rebbe, but their Rebbe would have passed him. The fact is that the Rebbe did pass him that. By the fact that Rebbe Akiva organized Klal Yisrael to go out in battle against Rome is an indication that he passed him, that for Klal Yisrael to go out and risk your lives. There's something else very fascinating about Rabbi Akiva. The rebellion ultimately failed. Not only it failed, it was crushed. Absolutely, brutally, brutally cold. Crushed. What usually happens in the aftermath of such a terrible disaster? What usually happens in the aftermath is, I don't know, certainly the Haaretz would have an editorial condemning Akiva ben Yosef. He took us out on a tragic adventure. Maybe they might even bring to mind his ancestry of Sisera, or, you know, if you let Cameron run this country, look at what's going to happen to us. And then, of course, I'm sure there are those who said, listen, the fact is that we've been telling you for years we should collaborate with Rome. We have partners there. There are people to talk to in Rome. They would have said, listen, here we were working on this roadmap with Rome. We come up with the tightest accords. Tenet understandings, the turnus rufus agreements. Rabbi Akiva never was condemned by anybody in Kleinsel. Rabbi Akiva remained the giant of Chachma Yisrael because they knew that what he did had to be done, and even the Rambam himself, who says that Rabbi Akiva and all of the wise men of his time thought that Bar Kochba was really Mashiach, it was Rabbi Akiva who crowned Bar Kochba as Dain Malkov Mashiach. This man is Mashiach. Was Rabbi Akiva wrong? Absolutely not. The Talmud says at another state, he could have been Mashiach. Elisha Goram Achet. Something caused that this was aborted. Heaven aborted the great events that were to happen. And we have to understand everything, though. We will understand things in the ultimate long range of history. So I think that number one, I think in all humility, that we have given what could be accepted as another pshat in the Nogu Kabu Zedazet. Maybe this Shabbos I'll try it on my guys in shul. You're the first ones, understand? Now, if I run it up the flagpole and they salute it, then I'm another great step ahead. I think I've explained, therefore, why it says that there were 24,000 pairs of Talmidim. There are 12,000 pairs of Talmidim. The idea of pairs is not to put two people together, so we would immediately think of Shnayim, Shahim, Haus, Baderech, two who are going on the way. I've also explained why it is a national period of mourning, because they weren't sinners. We're not talking about sinners. We're talking about saints who made the ultimate sacrifice on behalf of Klal Yisrael. So I still have the job of trying to figure out why the Gemara says that he died Basakra, diphtheria. So, you know what? I don't know. So you don't have to have answers to everything immediately. I want to put another few Rabbi Akiva statements together so that we will see another extremely significant part of Rabbi Akiva's personality and his great contribution. Number 5. The Mishnah in Masechet Shabbat says that a woman should not. The Mishnah lists all sorts of jewelry or diamonds or trinkets. Trinkets is not a good word. You know, expensive stuff that women should not go out with on Shabbos. And the Gemara says that these were prohibited because they're afraid that it's so beautiful and it's not sort of really warm, that a woman may take it off in order to show it to her friend and end up by mistake carrying in the Rishus HaRabim. These were so beautiful that she would be captivated by the beauty and showing it to her friend, and the friend would Google and gargle all over it. So they prohibited, one of the things that they prohibited was Ir Shel Zahav, a city of gold. So the Gemara asks, Ir Shel Zahav, what is a city of gold? Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, Yerushalayim Didahava, Jerusalem of gold. Kidvi Orakwa Rabbi Akiva Ludabitu, as Rabbi Akiva made for his wife. Rabbi Akiva made for his wife, he ordered a piece of jewelry that was sort of the skyline of Yerushalayim. There weren't any minarets there. That's one thing there wasn't. But there was most probably a choma and all sorts of other buildings, and it was made out of gold, and an ear shel zahav. Now, it seems that there are already people previously who had made ear shel zahav, but Rabbi Akiva's, the one that he made for his wife Rachel, was a famous chazal. I want to tell you, what's a beautiful piece of jewelry of that genre of ear shel zahav? It's the one that Rabbi Akiva made for his wife. And we're going to see why this is significant and why he made it for his wife. Let's take a look at number 3. Gemara in Brachos. The Maslita, the Nom, the Shmeda, the Rekiva, in one of the Talmudic writings we learn in the name of Rabbi Akiva. We sing in davening, L'cho Hashem ha'gedula ba'gevura ba'tiferes ba'netzach ba'hod ba'odor. It's over there, after Kol HaMashamot ha'alukah. So Rabbi Akiva says, L'cho Hashem ha'gedula, to you God is the greatness. Do you know what the manifestation of God's greatness is? The Zukri Asams is the splitting of the Red Sea. V'ha'gevura, God's might, the Zumachas Bechoros, it's the death of the firstborn. V'ha'tif Eret, the majesty, the beauty. Zumachan Torah, the giving of Torah. V'ha'netzach, eternity, Zoyim flight. To Re'akiva, who said that shot. Eternity, so you shall I. May very well be. May very well be, of course, the fact that Yerushalayim was in Roman hands and was being plowed under was something that Rabbi Akiva could not countenance, because the Hanetzach Zu Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, you don't give up one inch of Yerushalayim. The Ahod, the beauty of God, Zogeit Hamikdash. So we can understand, at least at this point, why Rabbi Akiva makes for his wife an ear shell zahav, because to him, Yerushalayim, Zuhanetzach, this is the eternity of Klal Yisrael. We're not finished yet. Let's take a look at the other side, and there, of course, we have the Gemara that we learned last week or 2 weeks, I don't know why, I don't remember anymore. We're going to take a closer look at the at this Gemara. Let's take a look. Here we have it with the English. Ukhar Hoya Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Loz Ben Azari, Rabbi Yeshua. In the middle of the page, where it begins with the English translation, on the left-hand side, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Loz Ben Azari, Rabbi Yeshua, and the Akiva were traveling on the road. This is after the destruction of the temple. Okay? And I believe, I would venture to guess that this was following the destruction of the temple, but it was before the rebellion against Rome. They were traveling. Rishon Kol Hamonash Romi Mipalto Budachok Mea Besmil, 120 miles away, they heard the sounds of the greatness of Rome. Yitchilu both, and they started to weep. Rabbi Akiva Mistachi, Rabbi Akiva was smiling. On the load, so they said to him, Neymartam Mistachi, why are you smiling? So he said to them, Neymartam Bokhim, why are you crying? On the load, so they said to him, Hallo Kushim Shemishtachavim La'atzabim. These heathens who bow down to idols and the Katavim La'avodas Kehovah and bring incest before idols. Yoshvin Betach Kahashke, they're living in security, quiet. V'anu Beit Hadon Gardlei Elokim Saruf, we, the temple which is God's footstool in this world, Saruf is burned. Saruf Be'esh is burned. V'lo Nifka, we shouldn't weep when he asked us. What kind of kashi he asked us? Could we please have that explained why he smiled in the face of tragedy? Amal and he said to them, Lokach Amin Tzachay. For this very reason, I'm smiling. My Lord, they did some of the car. Lord said, it's on the rock, it's coming to come up. If this is how God treats those who reject him, in such majesty and such strength and such power, hopefully you can imagine what's going to be when God is going to reward the Jewish people, those who are his children. Oy will we be zeicher to greatness. Shuv Kanachas, the second story. There are two stories. Another time they were olim in Yerushalayim, they were going to Yerushalayim. Kibush Yehidu Lahar Tzofim, a couple of them, when they arrived at Mount Scopus, at Har Tzofim, they're coming from the east. So they tore their garments. The next stop is they're coming in from the eastern side. They arrive at Har HaBayit, Temple Mount, and go up the Temple Mount. not from the side of the Kotel Ma'aravi, they are on the side, the Mizrahi side. Rav Shul, they saw a fax coming out of the Holy of Holies, they began to cry. Rabbi Akiva smiled, so they said to him, why do you smile? So he said to them, and why are you crying? So they said, Markus Shekostov of Azor, according to the place where it says that the Zor, the non Kohen, who comes close shall be put to death. In other words, a Jew, a good Jew is not allowed to walk there. And foxes, the Ashraf Shuol Milchubo, now foxes are walking there and shall not cry. On the other hand, so he said, Lekachanim Mitzvachek, therefore I'm smiling. Because it says, well, either the Aiden Amon, that with the Yah, Koyin, that the Kaya, then the Kayo, then the Rakyo, Yishayam says, I'm going to summon two witnesses, Uriya HaKohen and Zechariah ben Yerachiel. So Rabbi Akiva asks, Zechariah was a prophet at the beginning of the Second Temple. Remember, the prophets who came back with them were Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Uriya was a prophet during the period of the first Beit HaMikdash. Why are these two being put together in one passage? Uriya the Mikdash Rishon, who was a kind of the Mikdash Sheni. Hello. Rabbi Akiva says the two prophecies are interrelated. Uriah's prophecy was the prophecy of total destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Zechariah's prophecy was the prophecy that Yerushalayim will be filled with people, the young and the old. So he says, until I saw the fulfillment of total destruction, I was not sure what would be. I wasn't sure what would be with the prophecy of Zechariah, but once I see that the prophecy of destruction has been precisely fulfilled, then I know that the prophecy now I know that Zechariah's prophecy is going to be fulfilled. So they said to him in these words, Akiva Nichantanu, Akiva Nichantanu, Akiva, you have consoled us, Akiva, you have consoled us. A number of comments from this Gemara. And something I'm just thinking of now, that the Akiva is going to, some years later, he is going to lead the rebellion against Rome. Do you know what Rabbi Akiva is saying when he leads the rebellion against Rome? There is nothing that says that I have to sit around with my hands folded, waiting for a prophecy to be fulfilled. We have a responsibility to do whatever we can that a prophecy should be fulfilled. There were those who said, we have no business coercing the hand of God to gathering Jews to Eretz Yisrael. In his good time, he'll decide, of course, assuming that the Sadrut would not be on strike, to the Rishon, will bring Jews back to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva obviously passed from otherwise. Rabbi Akiva looks forward to the fulfillment of the prophecy of Zechariah. But for that, Rabbi Akiva at one point decides he's going to be the one who will activate the prophecy of Zechariah. There's a second point over here. When they're standing on Har HaTzofim, it says, they tore their garments. By the way,
You know who tore his garments to? It doesn't say they all tore their garments and Rabbi Akiva did. Rabbi Akiva also tore his garments. In other words, make no mistake, Rabbi Akiva is fully cognizant of the extent of the tragedy. But he balances it. This is going to be the greatness of Rabbi Akiva. The point that I want to get to is Rabbi Akiva understands that depression can lead to despair, and despair can lead to disappearance. He is terrified of despair. He's terrified that Klal Yisrael may lose hope. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva makes it his job. He is going to raise the spirit and the hope of Klal Yisrael. Yerushalayim is in ruins, but his wife is going to walk around with a Yerushalayim shel zahav around her neck that's going to shtech everybody's eyes out. This is going to be Yerushalayim shel zahav like nobody ever saw. Is it the jewelry that's important? No. Rabbi Akiva is sending a message. He wants to send a message. There's a Churban now, but there will be a Yerushalayim rebuilt. Make no mistake about it. Yom HaTzibut night, I was supposed to, thank God I was the second speaker in Shul in Harnof. All of our shuls together had a Yom HaTzibut gathering. If I would have been the main speaker, I was much worse than now. I could hardly get a word out. So the person who was the main speaker was Rabbi Pirom, who had been the chief rabbi of the Israeli army after Rabbi Gora. So he described he was in Tel Aviv on Yom HaTzmahot in 1948, and he described walking through the streets. He saw people crying at the announcement of the establishment of the state, and he saw people laughing. So when I got up to speak, I said, he explained to me something that I hadn't realized before. And I always had this feeling that Rabbi Akiva and his friends, Rabbi Akiva is right, and his friends are wrong. No. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Both are the words of a living God. When you look at Churban, and when you look at at Tikkunah, there are two legitimate expressions, crying and laughing. Akiva's chiddush is that he's capable of smiling or laughing at Churban because it becomes his task to give great encouragement to Klal Yisrael. He's going to be the voice of sanity. He's going to control the emotions of Klal Yisrael so that they shall not fall into despair. Because despair is the worst thing. Despair can bring to disappearance. There's a medrash that I don't bring here, but it's a beautiful medrash. The medrash says, Pam Achas, one time Rabbi Akiva was saying the Pasha, Vikesh Ha'am L'Hitznamen, the people wanted to fall asleep and our eyes were beginning to droop. So in the middle of the shir, Rabbi Akiva says, let Esther, who was the granddaughter of Sarah, who lived 127 years, let Esther, who's the granddaughter of Sarah, come and rule over 127 states. Do you understand what he's talking about? 127 here, 127 there. So you have to stay there. What are we talking about? I had another problem with this tomorrow. I can't imagine myself falling asleep during the year of Rabbi Akiva. And I had a chance in the world. So many years ago, I saw somebody explain the people wanted to sleep, they wanted to give up. They couldn't take the Shabbos anymore. The heel of Rome, we know about the years of Trajan, they were terrible years. Jews were tortured, Jews were killed in all sorts of terrible ways. It was gefährlich, we know what it's all about. That's what it was. So people, they wanted to go to sleep. In other words, like, let it all be over. There's even a statement in the Gemara, where the Gemara says, you know what? After all the Tzoras of the Churban, after the destruction of the Second Beit HaMikdash, there were those who said, you know, by night, lo liso isha, we shouldn't marry, the lo no lit bonim, we shouldn't have children, the zara, you lo lechol basar, lo lishdot yayin, not to eat, meat and not to drink wine, the zara, shal avlom avinu, kolom elayin, and the seed of avlom will simply disappear. It's over. We can't take it anymore. So the Rebbe says, P.K. Shalom with Snowman, the people wanted to fall asleep. They wanted to slide into despair. And Rebbe Akiva knew that if they slide into despair, they're going to be playing the dangerous, dangerous game of disappearance. And there was Rebbe Akiva to pick them up. So Rebbe Akiva said, he suckled them by saying, can you imagine the hopelessness of Sarah? Do you think it ever occurred to Sarah that at age 90 she would give birth? You understand the story? The story of life of Sarah is the story of against despair. You never give up. And that's the story of Esther. To whom would it have occurred that Agita Yiddish Meinala is going to become the queen over 127 states, a whole world, and she's going to be in the right place at the right time and do the right thing and save all of Klaus? Rabbi Akiva was the one against despair. That's what Rabbi Akiva is doing here. I think I pointed out, so this is the context in which we said it last. How do you think Rabbi Akiva would feel if he would walk through the streets of Yerushalayim today? Seeing the fulfillment of the prophecy of Zechariah. One final, on the first slide, number two, the famous last Mishnah in the Sefer Yonah. In the Mishnah of the Akiva, Ashreichem Yisrael, Lufnei Mi'atem et Ha'arim. There are some songs used to sing as a child, how fortunate are you Israel, before whom are you purified, Mi'atayetem, who purifies you? Avisham Shabbat Shemayim, your Father in Heaven, Shemhemer, as it says, Vizorakti Aleichem Ma'im Tehodi Mutahatem, I will sprinkle upon you and upon you the waters of purity and we purify. And it says, Mikveh Yisrael Hashem, the Mikveh. Now the fact is, the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu is talking about Mikveh from the word Tikvah, the hope of the Jewish people is God. Rabbi Akiva is using it to mean Mikveh, the water which one purifies. Ma Mikveh, Metaras Atvein, just like a Mikveh. Purifies the unpure. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Metaras Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Metaras Yisrael. You know, sometimes you sing something, you never realize the greatness of it. What's this great statement? Do you know what an awesome statement of Yaki is making? Imagine now. It's 2 months after the Churban. The Churban is on the 9th of Av. 2 months later is the 9th of Tishrei. It's Erev Yom Kippur. For the last 400 to 500 years, Klal Yisrael would join
in Yerushalayim to see the Kohen Gadol do the Avodah Yom Kippur. Mare Kohen, forgiveness, atonement, tshuva, the splendor of Yom Kippurim. And it's 2 months after the Churban, and Klal Yisrael is walking around more depressed and broken than they've ever been in their history. This is a Yom Kippur. This is not the Yom Kippur. This is a Tisha B'Av. That's what it is. And then there's a voice. Be happy. How fortunate you are! Ricky, what are you talking about? Fortunate. There's still smoke coming up from the embers of the burning Beis HaMikdash. And you tell us we're fortunate. Where is there going to be kapavah? Where is there going to be atonement? Where is going to be the soil Hashem, the soil Ukishor Yushoimim, as Hashem, Hanichot Yotz, and Ipi, Kohen Gadol, or Yukolim, Umishtachavim? And Rabbi Akiva is telling us, Ashrech and Yisrael. You know what message Rabbi Akiva is saying? He's saying, Yishinah, don't despair. The Rabbeinu Shalom himself is a source of purification. You can do tshuva and it will work. It will be just like the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. If he does, on the day will come, we'll have it. But right now, can you imagine, say, Ashrech and Yisrael, as we stand around the rooms of the Beis HaMikdash on our eyes. Rabbi Akiva, and I believe that's the reason why Rabbi Akiva remained beloved by Klal Yisrael. The rebellion may have failed, but the spirit of Klal Yisrael, Rabbi Akiva infused them with a spirit that has kept us going. Ad Hayom Hazeh. Just hope that that's why When we conduct ourselves with our veilus during the course of this period, till Lag Baim is the one day that they didn't die. They didn't die on Lag Baim. We're not talking about, a bunch of fellows who just couldn't conduct themselves with basic decency toward one another. The war is all codes. The war is code is talking about 24,000 people who gave their lives out. Kiddush Hashem, and the one who was the mastermind of it all, the commander in chief, was a great man by the name of Rebbe. All of Torah Shabbat Peh is Rebbe Akiva and his Talmidim. Those students that he taught when he came to the south became the ultimate pillars that created the Mishnah, that created everything that came afterwards. Okay.